At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Y'all better not come to my studio with that fake shit. Y'all better not come to my funeral with that fake shit. Y'all better off realizing there's nothing that y'all could do with me. All I ever ask is keep it 8 more than 92 with me. 100.
What up, though? June 4th? 5th? It's the 5th. June 5th, 2017. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the iHeartMeeko podcast. We are into my second year. We're rolling into year two now. Anniversary was May 10th, I believe, for year one. Thank you guys for riding with me. It seems like you guys are sending my link out and shit because the numbers are starting to grow. Motherfuckers are starting to show. So I appreciate you so much. Today, I have another interview for you, a receiver who played for the Chiefs, for the Chargers, and for the Miami Dolphins, my favorite team. Kidding. But yeah, he played for the Dolphins, drafted by the Dolphins, actually. A really good friend of mine. I've recently met his wife, and we've become friends over the last year and a half. And overall, good guy. Another guy that his story has never been told. Another guy that, you know, kind of flew under the radar. The quiet ones never get the shine they deserve. So, of course, I'm always looking for those guys that are ballers on the low. So I would like to introduce you to Mr. Chris Chambers. Chris Chambers, how are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm good. It's fucking raining like... like, this is the crazy time down here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been good weather all the last 3-4 months.
We've been living good the last few months. And here we are now in the bowels of death, it seems like. My pool is about to overflow. Like, what do you do when your pool overflows down here? You've been living here for a while. What do you do?
You let it overflow. Ain't nothing you can do. Just let it overflow and it seep into somewhere.
Just let it go.
You're used to a lot of rain around here, so it'll make it happen some kind of way.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for joining the iHeartMeeko podcast. I wanted to have you on because, first of all, we've become friends recently. Your wife and I have become really good friends over the past little over a year. And now we're all becoming one big little friendship, me, you, her, and hubby. So I definitely wanted to have you on to introduce you to my listeners. And yeah, I guess just hear your side of your life as a football player and now, you know, as a retired player. So just want to have you on, ask you some questions, get all in your business and shit, and just have some fun, you know?
Right with it.
So you ready?
I appreciate y'all, too. It's a nice little family forge we got going on here. It's Aiden and Crystal and, you know, yes. Brent, good person. Nice to get to know him a little bit. And you and Stacey hitting it off. So we good.
Let's
stay strong together.
Yes.
Stronger together.
Fuck this. No, let me stop. Let's go back to a better city. Cleveland. We are both.
Right.
I'm not from Cleveland, but you are. So you have a legit reason to be down right now. I am down. I drank Hennessy until 4 o'clock in the morning last night. And this is not normal because I usually don't care if my team loses, but I'm kind of salty this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm recovering today too. Then the rain don't help.
Right.
It was crazy that I got a chance to actually get out of the house and go watch the game somewhere. And you know, I had one of my homeboys in town from Cleveland. Actually, with his people, and we went to the Clevelander to watch the game.
I thought it was gonna be good luck.
Yeah, I mean, homeboy from Cleveland went to the Clevelander, watched the game. I figured that's the best we can do.
Yes, and then we got our ass whooped.
Yeah, they hung in there a little bit.
First half, it was a whole different game. Yeah,
right. They played better than before, but some of these boys need to start showing up.
Yeah, JR got to show up. Kyrie showed up late. Too late yesterday. third quarter is usually the quarter that the Warriors take off on people, and it happened to us.
Right.
It happened.
Right. They held it for a little bit. I watched a little bit of the replay. I mean, there were some close times there, but could never get over that hump. And then once you get in the fourth quarter with no real momentum, you can forget about it.
You can forget it with the damn Warriors. We got to be better. I'm hoping to make it. We got to win definitely one of these games at home, because I'm going to game five, and they better
make it. You're going to game five.
They better make it to game five, because, boy.
I want
to
go.
No brooms. Oh, well, let's fucking go.
Game five. Are you serious?
It's at the Oracle, though. It's at the Oracle.
Oh, no. It's game six, I'm thinking, then.
Yes.
No, we ain't going. Nah, you can't. Why are you going out there?
Brent is a goddamn. Brent is a Warriors fan, my nigga.
No, this is what you do. Y'all can go to game five, but if you go to game six, you have to come to Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, I would love to. I wish I could go to game three and four, but you know, I got shit going on here, so I can't up and leave.
Oh, we both do.
Trust, I want to just be out.
Experience.
Yes, I want to be out.
You never experienced Cleveland Cavaliers basketball at home?
Oh, I've been.
Okay, so you know a little something.
Yeah. I'm a true LeBron fan. I ain't gonna say I'm a true Cavs fan.
That's okay.
I'm a true LeBron fan, so I've seen him play everywhere he's been. But so you grew up in Cleveland. What was that like? I went to Cleveland on a trip, and it's a little sad there. It's a little down. But
when
the
last
people,
time? When
that
was
2013.
Yeah, you know, where we pre-Bron, when did Bron leave? 2000.
No, he wasn't back yet. He wasn't back yet.
2013, he wasn't back yet. Yeah, that's why.
That's why? Because he went there?
Yeah.
When he there, the city lit?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, when Bron is in the city, it's funny because before he came back, a lot of people knew he was coming back. It was like, I went to the city. They're like, what, Bron? Yeah, he coming back. You don't know that?
I'm like,
I guess, you know. So they building high rises. They building casinos. They building all type of clubs and
so
restaurants and
now.
All this stuff. And they got it going and got them back. And boom, $1 billion later into the city. Back thriving a little bit, you know. So the city's doing pretty well. Better than a lot of people think. You know, they trying to compare us to Buffalo.
Yeah,
Detroit.
Buffalo is the armpit of America. Everybody knows that. That's why they threw all. I done had so many fights at that bullshit ass stadium. They throw beer on me, all kind of shit, because I'll be like, this city is so depressing. Like, does the sun ever shine? Like, ever?
Yep.
It's sad. So when you grew up in Cleveland, was it a pretty fun city? Did you have a good childhood? How was your childhood?
My childhood was good. You know, I had some really good guidance from my uncles. They were all into sports. Mm-hmm. I lived on the east side of Cleveland, kind of close where, you know, kind of Bone Thugs and Harmony area. Mm. They were St. Clair.
It's 1999.
They were 99. We was like 92, 91, somewhere around there.
Okay.
So we were close by. Everybody went to the same high school. So the high school was Cleveland Glenville. So Cleveland Glenville now is kind of known for kind of a powerhouse, like a national powerhouse.
Oh.
Ted Ginn Senior, Ted Ginn Junior, then a whole bunch of other cats kind of went there. But that was back then, though. It was a little tough in that area, especially in the 80s and the 90s, because that's kind of where I went to like middle school level or elementary school level. So, you know, a lot of things was popping during that time when the drugs and the alcohol and all that stuff.
So it was like every other typical black neighborhood.
Yeah. Every other typical, needles in the streets. You know, of course, you don't know everything until you grow up. You're like, damn, I was in that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of started at. You know, I played three sports there. In Glenville, my first few years, obviously, I was actually a basketball player. Kind of my first love.
I hear this from your wife all the time, and she keeps saying you and Brent need a fade. I say, girl, I hear she be bragging about your little hoop skills, and I'd be like, watch out, honey.
I don't know how she bragging about anything when she don't know nothing about sports.
Well, she don't know a thing, but she just be like, Brent should play against Chris. Let Chris beat him up on the basketball. I'd be like, watch out.
Okay, I hear you, baby.
She be talking cash. Yeah, she don't know nothing, and she know she don't know nothing. But I love it, though, because she ride for you. She ride.
Yes, she do. She is a rider, straight up. No doubt. So I was, you know, a big basketball guy.
The hell is that?
Was going, the Indians was going, the Cavs was going, you know, they couldn't beat Jordan them, but they were like competitive. Mm-hmm. The Browns was competitive, you know, about the drive, you know, about the fumble. The Cavs, you know, about the shot, you know, with Jordan. That's actually my first basketball game I ever went to, was that playoff game when Michael Jordan hit that shot against Craig Elo.
Word?
So, yeah, so that, I mean, you're talking about deep tradition, deep roots. Indians was nice back in the day, too. So, you know, the sports in that part of Northeast Ohio was very high. And then you had Ohio State. I mean, the whole state, you know, pretty
y'all
much
was
coming
popping.
Together. So I grew up, in a nice time. I had a lot of, you know, favorite players and stuff for the Cleveland Browns, Webster Slaughter, Reggie Langhorne. These are like some of the guys people ain't going to ever probably know.
Right.
After Zeus. Eric Metcalf's my favorite player of all time.
We got the
Bernie
same
Kosar
last
was
name.
There. Yeah, so I got a chance to watch like all of them, the Dog Pound. So football, like going outside, watching football, then going in the snow, playing football, it was just like part of the culture there, you know, big time, because the sports is really what like a lot of people had, because it was tough times too.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything was popping with the sports and everything. And, you know, that's kind of how it was kind of growing up. But I pretty much stayed out the streets for the most part. My uncles and my mom, they did a good job of like making sure I had things to do. You know, I had buddies that, you know, stole cars and sold drugs and kind of did all that. But I never like crossed that line. I mean, I may have rolled in a car or drove a stolen car, but I never actually, you know, went in and popped the lock and did the whole thing. Go to the mall, go to the movies, and come back home. That's pretty much it. So it was a pretty fun time. And, you know, I actually moved around Cleveland a little bit. There's some different parts of Cleveland. You know, I had to get on the bus. So when I was in high school, I took three buses. RTA in high school. Yep, three
buses. It used to be called RTD when I was growing up in L.A. It used to be called the Rapid Transit something, but I used to call it the Rough, Tough, and Dirty.
You're right, right. So standing at them bus stops, all that stuff, you know, growing
struggling,
up and everything. So
the grind.
So it was there to get there. So I never really, since I played sports, I really didn't do a lot, like, after school. I was always either football practice, basketball practice, or I did track. And it's just like all through the year. So I really didn't have that downtime.
You had time to be
around.
Fucking up.
Nah, then the weekends I'll go with my uncles, and my uncles would take me to the basketball courts. And I was probably like 10, 11 years old, but they were like grown men. So I'm playing basketball with these grown men. That's how I started. So when I played basketball against regular, it was too easy. Way too easy.
I remember those days.
Yeah, so it was fun kind of growing up around them. Obviously watching the uncles grow up and all the silly, stupid things they did. That was kind of my father figures, because I didn't grow up in the house with my dad. So I had to kind of go off of them a little bit. But they did a good job of making sure I had everything I needed. And, you know, and I was just kind of growing up through high school. And I actually went to two high schools. I went to Cleveland Glenville, which is a very tough neighborhood. And a lot of recruiters back then did not go into that neighborhood to recruit. It was that bad. They wouldn't come nowhere near there. And so one of my uncles stayed out in the suburb and had me transfer over to a school in the suburbs. And that's when the suburbs was, you know, kind of mainly white back then. You know, now it's a little bit different. Like, it switched now. It's like more black people in the suburbs now, and more the white people are more in the city now. So, you know, it kind of went back and forth with that. So I went out there for a little bit, for a couple of years, and that's when I just started kind of thriving a little bit, started getting some notices. And, you know, and my whole big thing is that I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to play football and basketball. So in order to get me, let me play both sports. And I was getting recruited from like Xavier and Cincinnati, sometimes like some local schools, in basketball alone. And so I went on my visits to Ohio State, because that was my favorite team. That's where I thought I was going to play. But in Ohio, if you like a top guy, it's like, oh, automatic Ohio State. Like, they don't even got to recruit you. You're not even going to try. You know, you're going to come here.
It's happening.
But, you know, a few of us, you know, bounce out, you know, just like Woodson going to Michigan and some other guys going to some other big 10 schools. So they'll miss a few of them.
Why did you choose Wisconsin? Like, why did you
choose Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Well, Wisconsin was recruiting me for basketball. That's one thing. But when I went to Ohio State, my first school, they really wasn't on me letting me play basketball. They was like, oh, yeah, we'll let you play. But it really wasn't serious. I went to Michigan.
You felt like it was a setup, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, okay, you Ohio State, we're going to have you play football. It wasn't a serious thing. So, and that was on my top list. It's like, the school that I choose have to let me play two sports. Period. I got to see I'm too good of a basketball player not to give it a try.
Okay.
You know, and so went to Michigan, did the same thing. But Michigan was Michigan back then. It was like, all Americans only. That's it. It was the only way you get on that squad. So I knew that was a no. You know, just I think Fisher was a coach then. And then Michigan State, that's when Saban was there. So Saban recruited me out of high school. So, you know, I went there, spoke with him, and he kind of was okay. But, you know, Saban, he definitely wasn't serious.
Was not
you don't know.
With
I don't
that.
Know.
No, I believe you. He wasn't
rolling
with that.
Yeah, yeah. So You know, they had Plexico there too at the same time. It's like, yeah, we got a guy here. I didn't know it was Plexico, but we got a guy here that does the same thing. And I think Plexico either tried or he wanted to do it, but I don't know if he ever kind of did it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, you know, kind of went up that thread, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, I skipped Indiana and all them other spots. But then got up to Wisconsin, and I went on my visit, and it was just an outstanding visit. The campus was great. The people were very nice. It was very, like, cultural place. I mean, it's predominantly, you know, kind of – it's actually one of the biggest, ratio when it comes to, like, races, same mm-hmm. races, like, in a racial – you know, couples and marriages and stuff like that, like Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, so people get along pretty good up there. Okay. And it was just really, it was a really good campus experience. I mean, if you're going to be, you see Wisconsin now, if you follow any of that, you see how crazy you can get up there in Camp Randall. So I was in the midst of that, and they were coming off like some Rose Bowl championships, and Barry Alvarez was just starting. And so, you know, I went up there and, you know, went from Cleveland, you know, going to this, you know, Wisconsin. Yeah. So I ain't been around too many. You know,
yeah, so just, you got you a couple snow bunnies while you was up there, or no?
Yeah, I mean, I smashed a couple, you know. That's about it, though. But I looked at them a little different, though, when I left college. So I'm like, oh, man, come on.
Okay.
These chicks was like,
yes.
But it was just too easy, you know. Yeah. I didn't imagine. That's probably everywhere. So, it was a great campus experience. So I went there, and they let me play basketball. I couldn't believe it, because it was funny, because I did not practice none at all the whole season. I was just getting strong as a football player, really hitting weights, really doing all that. So I started to bulk up, started coming into my body a little bit. So, you know, I thought I was just going to go out there and just, once the season was over,
just hoop,
I went straight to practice. I didn't even do winter. Didn't go home or nothing. Went straight to practice, middle of the Big Ten season. And I ain't touched the basketball in about 6 months. Mm. And they're in the middle of the season. So you imagine, if you play basketball, you got skills kind of back.
Yes.
Dribbling,
completely
shooting.
Different from football going to basketball.
Totally different conditioning, everything else. And so they let me do it. So I got a chance to play in a couple games. I didn't score any points, but I did play in a couple games. Had a couple steals. But I was still a freshman, so it ain't like I was going to come in and, like, start. You know, I was really – but the offense then was so bad. Like, it was like this guy, if y'all remember Dick Bennett, and he was, like, a great coach for Wisconsin, but he was pure defense. Like, the games used to be, like, 50 to 40, you know.
That's
it's just like, you know, everybody picking, and then you get a shooter. And it was just, like, real slow. And that really wasn't my game. I was more – like athletic, run the court, you know, doing
down.
Different things, passes. Yeah, I was that type. I wasn't a methodical setting picks, coming around the screen and like doing all that stuff. And so that kind of like turned me off some. And then next year they got like Bo Ryan, and Bo Ryan's kind of a little bit more like up pace and stuff like that. So the program kind of changed a little bit after I left. But, you know, I wanted to at least give it a shot, you know, just to see how I was going to be. But then I was, you know, as a freshman, had a good year playing my first year, playing a couple games, played in a bowl game. They seen the potential. And then guys like scouts started looking pretty much looking at me when I was a freshman. And it was like, who is that kid right there? And then my coach was like, oh, no, you can't touch him. No, he's just a freshman. You can't even touch him. So when he told me that,
I was like,
it's on. To the NFL.
It's on.
Forget
this basketball shit.
I ain't even really did nothing.
Right. I'm focused.
Yeah, they already looking. So that's what kind of sparked me there. And I wish I would have ran track, because I was a really good track athlete, too.
I
wish I would have did.
Heard you were 400
running. Yeah, I wish I
would have
did that. Right. You know, I love that race. It really kind of carried me throughout my career.
I love
just
the 400,
the way,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. So didn't do that. So, you know, after that, just kind of, you know, didn't really go home as much, you know. Once you kind of got up in school, you just don't even see the family as much. They got to come see you.
Stay
you know,
there.
Every year, you're
stay
just staying on campus. Yeah. So. So kind of got away from the Cleveland scene a little bit, but kind of dipped back in and forth, and, you know, just had my opportunity once my junior and senior year to get drafted, going to the Miami Dolphins.
What was your best memory or favorite moment of your college career at Wisconsin?
Favorite moment? Oh, that's there's a lot of them, but got to be Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl. Tell me about the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, Rose Bowl. I mean, I played with Ron Dayne. Ron Dayne at the time was, you know, so you imagine that offense. It really wasn't a passing offense.
Mm.
Like football, I came from Wing T. So Wing T is like three running backs, one receiver. I wasn't even an all-state receiver. I was an all-state DB because we didn't really throw the ball. So I got the ball every once in a while. I did some punt returns. You know, every time I touched it, it was almost a house call. but I didn't have a lot of touches. But I was a hell of a defensive back too, a safety and a DB. So, you know, so I, you know, I kind of figured I wanted to play football after a while. Once I kind of, I mean, sorry, wanted to play receiver instead of DB when they asked me. So, you know, got an opportunity to do that. Yeah. So the Rose Bowl, it's just a, you know, to me, that's the best bowl game. I mean, everybody say the granddaddy and mom, until you really experience it.
I like the Rose Bowl. I was a USC fan growing up, so you know already know.
Yeah, that's you right in the backyard right there. Yeah. So that's just the parades and everything they do behind it, the gifts that we were getting. And it was some of the gifts are so funny. I think about it now. You get the college gifts. I mean, that'd be like the main reason you want to go. Yeah. I remember us getting like a damn TV with a VCR in it.
Oh,
you ever
lit.
Seen those?
Yes, the built-in.
Just imagine lit. We had those in college.
Lit.
So, right, exactly. So, you know, we get gifts like that, and you know, we're out there on the West Coast, and it was fun. So we played, I think, UCLA. UCLA was ranked like 2 or 3 in the country. Then we were ranked maybe in the top 10. And playing with Ron Dane, who was at that time a Heisman Trophy candidate and like the number one rusher in the college football at that time until Ricky Williams broke his record. I don't know if anybody broke Ricky's record, though. They probably did, if I can imagine.
Probably.
But, yeah, so he was
Wait,
the first one to
college
do that.
Football is, probably.
Right, right. So it was the Rose Bowl was a great experience. But, you know, one thing I do remember, my junior year, I dropped an open touchdown. And it's like when you play, it's like you always remember the stuff that you didn't, like the plays you didn't make, the ones that just stick with you just forever. And, you know, and I was like, man, if I get the opportunity to play again, I'm really going to do this. You know, even though we won, I was kind of down, though. Mm-hmm. You know, we won, but I'm like, man, I could have scored a touchdown in the Rose Bowl, and I blew it, you know. So I came back next year and just made a remarkable play, like, in the first quarter of the game. And that was, like, one of the biggest kind of catches ever made there. And it was like, okay, I'm here now. You know, I made a diving catch over the middle to kind of start the game off. And so that probably was one of my biggest memories. So we went back-to-back. We're the only probably Big Ten team that did back-to-back Rose Bowl champions. Yeah. I think till this day. So I would say that probably would be number one.
I actually remember that now that I'm flashing back because I was in college too. And I just remember that you guys won back to back. I was a little salty because it we used to always somehow end up with you guys being in the goddamn Rose Bowl back then. And I was like, how come they here again?
Yeah, it's great because, you know, people in Wisconsin, they get a chance to go somewhere at night.
To the
sunny,
West Coast,
warm.
Yeah. And then y'all uniforms look packed. Good with that rose on it too.
Right.
I can't even front. It does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the crowd. Most of the stands are Badger fans. Even though we play in UCLA and Stanford, we just outnumbering everybody. And it's just, you know, they call us like Badger West. They used to call it Badger West because they used to really come out and support us. And that school has a lot of people from California, from New York. They come from all over the country to go to Wisconsin. And it has good culture and tradition. So,
dope. So 2001, you're drafted. Biggest moment?
Yeah,
was that,
was
that
so.
One of your biggest moments?
It felt like a letdown.
Why?
Just
you felt like you should have went
like,
higher?
Yeah, just like probably everybody else.
Why do you think you went second round?
I think the offense slowed me down. Mm-hmm. You know, I got Crystal in here, so I got to get her. Close the door for me, Crystal. So it was number one was the offense, you know, because we were Ron Dane, run. Okay, play action to Chris. You know, so it was that type of offense. It wasn't a spread. It wasn't nothing fancy, nothing sexy. Just like hard-nosed football, blocking, catching, scoring. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. And so I think that hampered me some. But, you know, my numbers were – one thing I think I remember not doing is not running my combine, running a 40. I was ready.
Why didn't
but the
you
year
run
before,
it?
The year before, I ran a 4.29 for a hand time 4.29, so it was like a 4.3 something. So that would put me on the board a little bit because when you're in college, your juniors can do some stuff too for the scouts. So they let us run the 40, and then that kind of got me on the board. And so then I backed it up with a good season. So, you know, going into it, you know, I didn't have the combine training like they did now. Stayed at school, just like probably everybody else back in the day. They didn't have all these performance training facilities and all this stuff. You know, so, you know, you didn't really know what to expect once you got there. It wasn't prep like how they prep them now. They're like, perfect.
Yes.
Plus, it's on TV, so everybody is doing it. You know, it's just a big deal now. It wasn't a big deal then. And so I went in there like, okay, I ain't about to do nothing. I mean, I got Reggie Wayne. I got Santana Moss not doing nothing. I think Chad did something because Chad had a shelf because he was coming from a smaller school. And I think he played 1 year because they didn't really know who Chad was. So he went out there and put on a darn show. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, because he
and
went then, to a smaller school, though, right?
Yeah, he went to a JUCO or something like that before. And then he went to, I think, Oregon like 1 year. And then he was out of there.
Yeah.
Oregon State, and he was out. So he was in that class. I mean, it was a hell of a class. David Terrell. I mean, it was just a bunch of guys. Gardner. So, you know, I can name all of them, obviously, but. So I didn't participate in the combine like I should have. And I think that kind of put my score down a little bit. But going into the draft, I still was ranked number 20 on Mel's big board. So okay. I kind of like, okay, you know, I'm going to make it happen.
Kiper had that board back then, too.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Kiper, you know, Kiper was the man back then. Though.
He still is. Ain't no Todd
but there was no Todd Mishay.
Okay.
These other
he was
cats.
The lone ranger then. He was the lone.
Nobody was doing that. It was Kiper board. That's it. So, you know, if whatever he said, you know, now it's split up a little bit, but, you know, he's still the man. He still know his stuff. But yeah, man, so you're on the board and, you know, and I thought I was going to be going at, you know, early before 20 and, you know, a couple coaches said they were going to take me and it was just kind of going on and on and on. And after the draft was very long.
Was you stressed?
Because I had a big kind of party and I'm like walking in, like, you know, I'm about to be out of here. You know, and then it just was long, like 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, like 6-7 hours. And people looking at me like,
damn,
what you
do, drug
test or something? My uncle asking me, I'm like, nobody ain't tell me I did anything. I don't know what's going on.
It's just how it goes.
And you see, and you're like, okay, Greenback. All right, I went to Wisconsin. You know, I bought out. I know they see us. You know, we got good relationship in Wisconsin. I'm going there. It took somebody else. Okay. Philadelphia, my offensive coordinator, he there now, Brad Childress, no doubt he going to take me. I'm out of here to Philadelphia. Mm-mm. They take Freddie Mitchell. So, and Freddie Mitchell, he was UCLA. That's your boy out there on the West Coast.
That ain't my boy.
Ain't your boy, but, you know, that's let's clarify that.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, but that on the West Coast, UCLA.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, a lot of people, you know, like him out there. And he had a good college season. So, you know, they kind of reached for him. And then the Browns come up, hometown. I know they
you just knew
me.
That was the one.
No, they gonna
you
take
just
me.
Then knew
they
it.
Took somebody else. They, I might have. I don't know who they took. Somebody. I think took a receiver. So about 11 receivers went before me.
You was over there disgusted, stomach and knots.
Just disgusted. Just disgusted. My boy had went at 24 because Miami called me at 24 and said we about to take you. Ended up taking my teammate Jamar Fletcher, who was a Thorpe winner at the time, and so he went off the board. My other guy went. Michael Bennett went off the board. He went to Minnesota, and so I'm just waiting there. And then, you know, I get a call from the Saints, and they trying to keep me on, like keep me on the line because they were up next. And soon that they had me on the line, Dolphins just pretty much picked me right there. So they took me in the second round, jumped over the Saints, and just took me right there. And it was just like, it was a relief. And then it was like, oh, man, I'm going to Miami. I just literally left Miami for spring break. So, you know, I went to spring break in Miami, and then next thing I know I'm back in Miami. And
so how did you feel about that? Were you happy about going to Miami? Like, what a fun city, you know?
Yeah, but I really ain't know at that age. You know, I was really Wisconsin.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like
Cleveland, Wisconsin.
See, right. Yeah, that's a big jump right there. That's a humongous jump. And so it jumped into got a chance to get out there, and I just remember the humidity and not being able to breathe, and you know, it was just it was crazy how it kind of worked out. But you know, made a few plays, and you know, it was awesome. Went from there.
So you had a really good career with the Dolphins. I mean, I looked up, you know, a little bit of your stats, and it just seemed like from the time you got there to right before 2006 when Joey was playing you, everything was good. I mean, you were
Nico.
What? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
You hear me? Oh, I don't know what just happened.
Okay.
I said from the time you got to Miami until right up to 2006, you were playing really well. You know, you had 1,000 yards, I believe, in 2005. You had 11 touchdowns. Like, you were doing great. And then all of a sudden, in 2006, you didn't get the ball that much.
Right.
So what do you think happened with your experience in Miami? Like, is it a typical situation where guy gets drafted, they make him the featured receiver, contract is almost up, let's freeze him out and get him out of here? Do you think it was that type of situation?
I think it was a little bit of that. and because we had some young guys. We had young, like Ted Ginn. Ted Ginn was like a first year, and you had like Derek Hagan. Really, nobody like, okay, I'm about to just hang my hat on these guys and roll with them. So it really didn't make no sense at the time anyway. So
that's what
I don't
know.
It could have been, it could have been inside. I have no idea. Somebody might not have liked me. I have no idea. No,
you had some
no
issues
talent.
There? Was you a loudmouth? What was your issue there?
You know, I was pretty good. I was obviously in the community. You know, as a karaoke of quarterbacks, karaoke of coaches, karaoke of offensive schemes that you had to relearn and relearn the quarterback and get, you know, that's very
just
hard.
Too many people
that's very
coming in.
Unstable. I made the most of it because I was very athletic and I was able to make some plays without having perfect balls or this and that. So I was just a raw guy, athletic, able to make plays until I started learning how to run routes. And that's when I kind of got my jump off from there in 2003 when I was in North Turner offense. Mm-hmm. And that offense was high powered, you know, down the field, vertical. So it my attributes fit that offense very well. So that's why I just jumped from 7 touchdowns to 11 touchdowns.
Right.
Even though I probably could have had about 16, 17 if we had made some connections. But, you know, it's just I started learning offense second year, learning the offense, you know, and then he leaves. And then it starts over with another guy. And then you get another quarterback in there. No, you know, no Tom Brady, no Peyton Manning.
How many quarterbacks
do
you guys go through in those 5 years?
Because
I'm counting
11.
Four. Jesus. I'm seeing Joey Harrington, Gus Farah, A.J. Feely, Jay Fielder, Ray Lucas. Like, who?
Yeah.
What was going on there at that time?
It was a lot of stuff going on. I think it wasn't a stable upstairs. Let's get that right. It wasn't stable upstairs. That trickled down to the coaches. Trickle down to the players, and it just didn't come together because we had outstanding football individual players, even mm-hmm. even team guys. It was good team. You would think of Jason and Zach and Sam and Brock, like all these guys defensively, that's what they hung their hat on the mm-hmm. most, and that's how they won games. It's like, okay, we're gonna defensively, we can hold you under 15 points, and then we can score a little bit more than 15. That was Daywan's set mindset. So even though he had some threats outside
offense,
and some other players, we didn't have the upper echelon quarterback. We just won games. We won. We played not to lose, basically. That's
how
we
played. Who was the best quarterback in that little span you were there? Which one of those guys, if you had to just go with one, which one of those guys you think was the best one?
That's tough. That's tough because when you catch a guy like Farrakh and Dante,
did you
Cole
play with Dante?
At the
right
end of the game, yeah. At the end of their career with injuries, it's just like you don't get the you don't get the full of them. So,
know what? That's probably not a good question.
But it's okay because I mean, me and Dante were starting to have some rapport. Like when I got there, and his coaches, offensive coordinator Scott Linehan, came from Minnesota, it's like, okay, they about to treat me like Moss.
Thought you was lit.
I'm throwing my hand up like 10 yards before
I got him.
Like,
throw it.
Yeah, because he's telling me like, yo, you beat him. Because Dante had that arm where he can throw late if he needs to throw like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that crazy stuff for a little bit. And we're starting to actually make some plays off of it and start to get a rapport. But he played four games. I think Dante played four games and that was it. He was done. Farrakh was actually my best year with him. So if you want to say
2005 was definitely your best season.
Yeah, if you want to say that's the best quarterback, I would probably say probably because I had my best year with him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was guys like Brian Greasy that threw nice balls and Sage Roosevelt that threw nice balls. They just wasn't in the system. It didn't fit even. We didn't have no line to block them or it's just everything just wasn't clicking. It just didn't click for years and years and years. And even when we had – you know, Ricky and Ronnie and, you know, myself and Randy McMichael and Wes Walker
just sound
and Marty
like was,
Booker.
You sound like you was naming New Edition when you said that. Ricky and Ronnie and Mike. Bobby came through.
We didn't know, you know? We was. We never got rock off like that. And
yeah.
That's why the stats went down. It was, you know, the quarterback, Wes was able to get open real quick, boom, throwing ball. You know, before you even get out the route, ball be out their hand. You know, the line coming out their hand. So we couldn't stretch out like I know we could have stretched with that type of firepower on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, had to deal with that for some years, and you know, Cam Cameron came in, and you know, he changed the offense a little bit, and you know, I got back to some of the stuff I did with North, and because he came from San Diego, so that was an offense that fit me a little bit better. That year I got traded, I probably was top five in the league in like catches or somewhere around in yards. I was having a decent year. I didn't have no touchdowns yet, but it was okay.
You talking about in San Diego?
Yeah, before San Diego. So
2000.
You know,
okay.
I did. Yeah, so I did have some issues. I had a DUI. I didn't get convicted for the DUI, so let me tell you that back. But I got pulled over when I was in Charlotte. And so it was like right in the middle of like, it was like dead time for the NFL, like July. Like that's, nobody ain't doing nothing. So it's like my shit running on damn HSN and CNN. And like,
you everywhere. Really don't, you yeah, were like, everywhere.
Don't even need to be. You know, I get pulled over. The guy asked me to take a breathalyzer test. I told him no.
You know, like
I did
you
have
should.
Some drinks earlier that day.
You're supposed they to say no. Hell no.
Yeah, they said don't take the breathalyzer test. So I did. I did my street sobriety test. Passed that. And he's like, oh, man, your eyes look glossy. You know, and remember, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, God.
All right. Let's
oh,
get
God.
That right.
And, the Bible Belt. You
know, yep. And, you know, so I just took it over the face. I mean, it was funny to me, but it honestly wasn't really, you know, the aftermath was like, oh, man.
It was drama.
Really, you know, yeah, shoot. So I did my breathalyzer once I got to the shop, blew below the limit. I was in the cell for a little bit. And then I said, man, take him out to cell. Why y'all got him in there? And then, they, you know, came and got me, and that was it. Hired a lawyer. It took a few weeks, got expunged, but nobody ain't hear about the expunge. They just heard about all the other stuff. So
all they you're drunk and you almost killed. You don't care about life. You killed someone, right?
Yeah. So that's probably the worst thing I've done when it comes to that, but if they wanted to look at that. But besides that, I was really big in the community. I was the man of the year 1 year.
Man of the decade.
Everything that, yeah, did what they asked me to do. You know, I bit my lip a lot of times on just, you know, wanting the ball and this and that. I really wasn't a vocal person, like, you know.
Do you regret any of that? Do you regret any of that?
I wish I would have been way more vocal.
What do you think would have changed had you been more vocal?
I would have got the ball more.
See?
I would have made more plays.
I tell people all the time, man.
More touchdowns.
Yeah. You got to speak up. You know, close mouth. Don't get fed.
I was passive. Even when we had the meetings, like all the team or like the special 11 guys or, you know, all that stuff, I really didn't. I just sat back when Zach was talking or Jason was talking or, you know, all these guys, perennial pro bowlers. I really didn't open my mouth much because I was a leader on the field. Like my play, like with my leadership, and really I wasn't a rah-rah guy.
Yeah.
I did answer the all the questions in the locker room when I got to that point where I was like, you know, pro bowler and all that, right, where you got to go to the podium and do all that thing. And so I had to run and do that a little bit. So, you know, once I kind of left that whole situation, it was just like a little breath of fresh air, you know, going over to San Diego,
reconnecting with
Norv. Reconnecting with Norv, getting away from Miami, you know, seeing nightlife and just living there and working there is just a totally different monster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people that don't understand because you got to be there. You know, and that was the reason why I was trying to get a second home somewhere else. I'm like, I'm not staying here in all season. I'm about to go somewhere. I don't need to be just out all, you know, just seen all the time. So trying to do that. So it was good to get on the West Coast, laid back San Diego, clubs closed at 2 o'clock, you know, weather nice. It was, you know, it was really a breath of fresh air. And then playing with just some of the best players that ever played the game was just took it to a whole nother level. So that's when the career kind of got real fun for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, took a little pressure off me because I didn't have to be that guy. Gates was that guy, or LT was that guy, or Phillip was that guy. But I was getting one-on-one coverage, making plays, you know, and everybody was just having fun with each other. And so, you know, that was a really good moment in my career, you know, those first couple of years.
That's good. So you ended up leaving San Diego as well. Drama.
Yep.
You think you left because of play or drama?
Definitely drama.
Definitely drama.
I would say definitely drama.
So
the play really didn't, I mean, it didn't, they had some younger guys, all right, because when I got there, the reason I came there is because Malcolm Floyd and Vincent Jackson, but they just wasn't ready. And so reconnected with Norv, that's when they was like, oh, we about to go to the championship. We got Chris, it's we about to go. And we almost did. We
right.
made all the way to the AFC championship game, and we've had some good years. So, you know, so it was just a little different. But then once, you know, the second year actually was, I think it was going to be my best year of my career. I was at the prime. I started off the career, had a full offseason with Phillip. I was making plays in camp. You know, I started off the season. I think I had about 4 or 5 touchdowns in the first 5 games. I was just on my way. Ended up getting injured in Miami.
Was random.
At all places.
Right.
And I guess somebody was getting me back. I don't know. I got injured there. So,
you shouldn't have been injured there. You ain't do nothing to their ass. Shit.
Hey, well, I just, you know. I
just
don't know.
Happened.
So, I got injured there, and I was going to light them up, too, and I was just getting started. But they, obviously I would have had a chip on my shoulder, too. You know, once I got back, it was just like, I ain't talking to nobody. I'm about to just go ball on these boys. But yeah, so, you know, that's, you know, that year kind of went past because I kind of limped the rest of the year. Had a high ankle sprain. I did my best to play some games. I ended up getting healthy towards the end of the year. But at that time, Malcolm had a chance to really kind of flourish a little bit. Vincent started flourishing a little bit. And so they like, okay, we're paying Chris, you know, X amount of money a year.
And he's hobbling.
Yeah. Let's cut that off and get Malcolm, who we ain't paying nothing. And Vincent, we ain't paying really nothing. And, you know, so I seen my play kind of decline that next year. And then they kind of used the drama, I think, more as a scapegoat. Because obviously, you know, once I moved on from my first marriage, you know, Stacy there, my wife now, was in the crosshairs of that. And, you know, unfortunately, she had to take a lot of slack because of that stuff, because it really wasn't her fault. You know, it was just somebody who fell in love, and it's just what it was. And then, you know, didn't want to be with her. And so that's why I moved her out to San Diego. And then that's kind of when some of the drama started out there with the wives and, you know, all that stuff. So it's just a lot of hating on her, making up stuff, saying that she's a stalker, putting her mugshot on the internet, you know.
So what do you? I want to ask you, how do you feel about everything that has been said? Because obviously, I met your wife, and I had no fucking clue, like none of this stalker. I had no information on it, and then she was like asking me like how I felt, because apparently she has some issues with people meeting her and judging her based on some things that are in the media. So how did it feel for you to hear all these people saying that your now wife was stalking you and you had all these what was it called, they had like restraining orders and all this stuff on her? Like, was all of that real? Was that true? Like, what part of it was true?
Yeah, you know, it was a tough situation during that time. Just kind of transition. I honestly would have did some stuff a lot different. You know, I would have probably sought, you know, better guidance instead of seeking guidance from the team. You know, like their player
getting
development. Really,
yeah.
That should have went outside of them. And so once that kind of come in, you know, once that guy, he's gonna be a little mule to tell, you know, everybody else what's going on, and they're gonna say something. And it's not going to look good once it gets to the top. It's going to be all this like mess kind of going on. So, you know, it was a tough situation where I felt like they tried to choose, you know, it's like, oh, you be with this girl. How can they tell me that? Or you don't play with us. That's how
they
I
told
felt.
You to stay with your like, current wife at that time.
No, they didn't say that either, but they were saying that, you know, that was just causing a little bit of static in the locker room, you know, because, you know, you got players, you got wives, you got people talking, they gang up, you know, and all that stuff. So, you know, the players are always good. You know how the guys are. It's not really us that kind of go through that.
It was the women that were dealing with
more
the drama.
It was more the women and all that stuff. And so, you know, all that stuff, you know, I felt like, you know, they kind of forced me to choose who are you. And then I was like, you know what, man, I'm not doing that. So all that stuff they was trying to do with the restraining orders and all that, I was like, man, y'all need to stop. Drop all that stuff. It was literally dropped like the next day. And, you know, it wasn't nothing I did. I felt like it was a planned kind of attack, you know,
on
like,
her.
Okay, we're going to get Chris in the room. We're going to tell him this, and then we're going to do this. You know, it's just like way too much. Like nobody was, you know how people could say they're, you know, they fear for their life or this and that. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of that stuff was true.
It was all bullshit.
Yeah,
and just to make it just look like it was something
and
that wasn't.
I didn't come out with like a conference, like a press conference or nothing, you know, to like explain it. Because I feel like I didn't need to explain it to nobody. You know, it's just like, I know the truth and she know the truth. It was like, all right, well, you know, I guess we Bonnie and Clyde out here. So, you know.
Bonnie like a motherfucker because she don't play. She don't play.
So we like, you know, she had my back and, you know, so they released me in the middle of the season. And then I pretty much got my opportunity to Kansas City once again, having an opportunity to kind of like change locations and areas and, you know, Miami, San Diego, now Kansas City, you know, where, you know, it's a little bit even
Midwest.
Less.
Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest.
Back in the different kind of Midwest, because Cleveland Midwest is different than Kansas City Midwest.
Yeah, that's the real Midwest right there. That's about as Midwest as you're going to get. And I think a good fan base, but they were sorry then. They were so sorry. That's why when you go on waivers, you know, the last, you know, the last team in the NFL can choose you first.
Yeah.
So you had no choice. They were the last team. They choose me, and that was it. I think Cleveland was up next and somebody else, which I would have loved to go back home and play. I would have absolutely loved to do that. You know, and so, you know, went there and, you know, had a successful year, ended up leading the team, only played 9 games and led the team in, you know, catches and touchdowns. And Dwayne Bowe is just kind of getting, you know, he didn't get it yet. Starting to get it a little bit. But then I feel like my presence helped him, just like Malcolm and Benson. I felt like I was able to help him, teach him some things, be a leader, be in a receiving room and stuff like that. Somebody can look up to. And the next year or two, I think he kind of made some career numbers from there. You know, and then when I left, it kind of went another way. But definitely helped out that situation for sure.
Wow. So then this is year 10 for you at this time, was it?
This is year 9.
Year 9.
So this is year 9.
So were you there when the, what was his name, Belcher, I think?
I was not.
You were not there when Belcher was there.
I knew Belcher. Stacy knew the wife. Nice family. Very quiet guy. I wouldn't have seen that coming, you know, and I don't think a lot of those guys seen it coming. So I think that was the next year when I left, because it, you know, and like I said, it wasn't a great situation there when I got there, but then the following year we made the playoffs. Like, it was just like a resurgence, you know, and it's funny when I got there, it was like, you know, you just play. Like, I just got traded and I'm playing on Sunday. I don't know.
That's
no
how
plays.
It is. That's how it is. Hey, you don't need no damn plays if you can just play, right? Just get open.
I scored 2 touchdowns my first game. The coach was like, shit, man, you just woke us up, man. I was sleeping this game right now.
Right.
It's like, And so the guys fed off of that. We started getting more competitive. I started getting into more of my leadership, you know, how I play on the field role. You know, the guys looked up to me there, all the young guys there. They had some great young guys, Eric Berry and, a couple of Flowers. I can go on and on. That team was loaded with young guys, and that's why they were able to kind of play the last couple. When I was there, and then they back kind of loaded a little bit. But back then, you seen Tomba and all these guys. So it was some good guys to kind of be around and hang around and, you know, win some games with.
So what made you decide that you were ready to retire? Because it's different for everybody. You know, we right. all as athletes have some, maybe a moment or maybe our body or something that happened. So what was it that made you decide, you know what, I want to hang him up?
Yeah, you know, I didn't. It was the injuries that took me out. So I had career ending injury. The next year, coming off the year that I had, I was a 1-year contract, where I was into my contract with the Dolphins. So it was like, you were Dolphins, then San Diego pick up the contract, and then Kansas City pick up the contract. It was like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so that was the end of that one. And then I re-signed with Kansas City. I had a few teams. Now, this is one time where I felt like, man, the Dolphins can get me back. Like, I can honestly go back to the Dolphins right now. I played a good year. They need some help at wide receiver. I think Marshawn Wade have been there or not there yet. Okay. But they didn't even reach for me. So that kind of upset me some. Maybe it's because of some of the drama stuff. Maybe, you know, that scares some teams too. You know
but
how
you
that
were
is.
Married by then, so, right?
Yeah, I was married by then. So, but still, you know, people still didn't know really what was going on.
Okay.
Unless they kind of asked me. So, you know, I had a few teams. I had Buffalo. I had Kansas City. I think I had another team, some other team. But it really wasn't that many teams interested in me. But my agent seemed like all 32 was interested in me. So, you know, he did a really good job with that one. We had like 2 or 3 teams fighting over me. It was pretty cool. But I had no way wanted to go to Buffalo. But I wouldn't mind going to play with Lee Evans. So that was the only reason I was considering, like, oh, man, I get to play with one of my guy I grew up with high school, college. You know, we can do this thing, play on the other side of them. So I felt decent about that. But then in Kansas City, you know, I did a good job for them. They gave me a good contract. And, you know, so I just kind of spent that year with them. But then, you know, Charlie Weiss come in, Romeo Crennel, and it's just like things kind of changed a little bit. The philosophies changed some. We didn't have, you know, Matt Castle. He was decent, you know, but not
trash.
No Tom Brady, obviously. Yeah, well, if you want to say
it.
No,
he wasn't trash.
He had guts.
Yeah, he
had
was
some intangibles.
I'm hating.
He made some plays, you know, a year or two. So, you know, it worked out decent. But then, you know, after a while, I got hurt in training camp. I didn't know I was hurt, and this is back now. And Brent, I know he's so happy now. They ain't doing two-a-days and all this crazy stuff.
It's still
we
stupid.
We did two-a-days. But every day for 32 days, we wore pads.
Oh,
they wanted us to be
God.
A tough, physical team. Now, we was, though. Like, when we came out against San Diego, we was, like, off the ball on them, and we just carried it. We used to run the ball with Jamal Charles. We had Thomas Jones. I mean, we was, like, tough as nails, seriously. And I think it was because training. But that wore me down, though. So Ty Haley,
much.
he wore me down because I'm 19 years. You got to, like, take care of me now. Take care. I'm the game. I'm going to be
you're
good.
You're fragile.
Yeah, don't have me running, the blocking, and like Nora was
you had
good
to do,
at that. Like,
yeah, so many reps
off, like,
at year 10
Diego,
in two-a-days.
Like, we took days off. You know, Noah was good. Hey, you, LT, Gage, y'all ain't practicing today. Y'all watch, you know. It was just like, that's how you got to treat your players. Even when I remember with Joey Galloway, I used to hear that he didn't even practice none of the week. Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, these dudes ain't even practice. They'll come, do they walk through it like on Friday, game time with them. You wouldn't know no difference. And so I feel like as a veteran receiver, you could still do some of that, and he didn't take off of me. So I don't know what was going on with my hip. I was trying chiropractor, I was trying acupuncture, I was trying like medicine. I was everything. I took Advil every day.
Gross.
I didn't know what was going on, you know, tore all shots and all that stuff. So, you know, once the season was over, I broke my finger that year too, so I didn't play that much. And once the season was over, we went into the lockout. And I didn't have a good season. Didn't really get a chance to make any plays. I played literally with one hand because I had a broken finger. But they tried to cast me up for the whole year. I was a setup for real.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna play with. I mean, I can make some plays, but still,
right?
You know, I need both my hands. But they, you know, I just had some injuries, and then once the season, I went to get my hip checked out up in New York. Dr. Brian Kelly, a hip specialist of, you know, one of the best in the country. So he told me I was bone on bone. He said nothing really I can do about it. I kept it from the team a little bit. They reported it to the team, but I at lockout, you couldn't have no contact. If you remember, you couldn't even talk to nobody over there, at least. And so that went that whole 8 months, like August. And so I knew right then and there, once I went in there, they cut me. And I was like, you know, I think this might be over. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to try to overcome this one too. And so I started training again and started doing some things and like, okay, started to feel better, but the hip still was just, it was too much on me. You know, I bought some stuff for my, like to wrap my leg good where you don't feel the pressure of the bone on bone. And it just, you know, it too just much. Didn't work out. And that's like, you know, I'm done. And so 3 weeks later, once I was done, I get a call from San Francisco.
They wanted
to try me out. And I'm like,
no,
I jumped up. No, I jumped
up. Oh, you
up.
Went.
I jumped up. And it was, I did something so stupid because I'm like, man, I got to be out there in 2 days. I'm about to go to the gym and work out.
Oh my God.
Went to the gym.
Probably toyish.
I'm like, yeah, I'm doing squats. I'm doing all this. Remember, I really wasn't going like that. I stopped going like that. So imagine doing that, trying to like
out
do
of nowhere.
Something. Right. I did some routes out, you know, all that stuff. And then I flew to San Francisco overnight, got up, no breakfast, no nothing. Just went out there and just ran around. I did decent. I mean, it was guys like TJ Houshmandzadeh there who came out with me, who was behind me, actually, in the draft. Him and Steve was behind me. So I was 52. Mm-hmm. They might have been like 60 or something like that. I don't even know. So the guy from Atlanta, the big white boy, Brian. I don't know who I'm talking about. Big, tall.
Finneran. Yeah.
Finneran was on his last two. And they had a couple other guys. So we all out there. Harbaugh's throwing us the ball and. You know, so it was decent, you know, decent showing. But after I was hurting so bad, my leg hurt so bad, I was like, that's when I knew. I was like, you know what, that's it.
I can't do this.
That's it. I'm done.
You
I gave it a
to
shot.
Your body.
You know, that one I did. I was like, I'm done. That gave me the final. That's it. So quiet, though. You know, you'd be wanting to go out with, you know, people on the shoulders and all that, you know, but I went out really quiet, you know.
Just politely made an exit from the NFL.
Right.
So life after football, I know you. I know that you're married. I know you have a four-year-old named Crystal. You are
five.
She's five now. Jesus. And now you're expecting your second child any day now, legit. Any day now.
Yeah. Any
fucking
day
now. You're a gym owner.
Yep.
Chamber Fitness right here in South Florida. Is that considered Davie where you guys are?
That's Davie.
Davie. Tell me about life after football.
Well, you know, I kind of jumped in head first because during the time of the lockout, I just started to try to figure out what I wanted to do. And I got approached by a company called D1 Sports. You might know them. Mm-hmm. They have probably the most performance facilities in the country. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted me to be like the face. That's how they do their facilities. They have a face pair to it. So it's Manning's at one and somebody's at another one. They put a face with it. And so they gave me the business plan. They were actually working with Wayne Huizenga at the time. So Wayne Huizenga was the Dolphins owner who was looking to roll out 300 of them things as a plan. You know, they had about 20 of them. And so they were hot and heavy down here because they're still not here. But they were really about to turn up and try to get down in this location because they'll take an old Circuit City or an old Sports Authority or something. Uncle Barnes mm-hmm. & Noble going out of business, and they'll flip it into an indoor training facility mm-hmm. where they have all the turf and have the medical. So they had the model for it, you know. So, you know, I had to listen to all that. I kind of got with Wayne Huizenga's advisor. His name was Mark Geddes. Mark Geddes is the owner of a company called Superfan. So, you know, he had all the business plan, all the, you know, the models and, you know, how everything, you know, supposed to go, you know, already. And I pretty much just slapped my name
slap
on
it. Slap your name,
you know,
on it and a check and
yeah,
roll.
Yeah, that was it. That was a problem, though. I didn't have no check. I used my check. And that's what I would have did differently at the time. I would have just got somebody else money. I would have just said, okay, let me get some partner. Especially early on, like, you definitely would have got easy. But once you kind of get into it, you get the numbers, they're not looking right, you know, it's harder to get people to do stuff. Right. And so, you know, I made a mistake by doing that first. And then not really having a lot of business, like, you know, just education,
experience.
You know, just going to school. Like, I would have probably went to school like some of the guys are doing now. Kind of going to school, taking it easy, not resting into none. Let me go get the education part, you know. So, you know, so I needed like an advisor to help me out. You know, I wish I didn't, but I did have to trust somebody. And so he kind of was that guy to kind of help trust. So he kind of helped me along the way the first year, just learning the whole sports performance business. And at that time, youth performance was like picking up seriously, like soccer, all that stuff. Like people were getting paid for training for youth performance. And so that was our model. It was really a kid group model where the numbers had to be, you know, one coach to 10 kids. And, you know, everybody's on memberships, 3 months, you know, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. And so that was the model we kind of rolled with at first. But the difference between what I did, I fell in love with the facility that I chose because I went to Barnes & Noble's. And I loved that facility. It was right there on Sawgrass. People probably remember that. I looked in there and I'm like, man, this can be the spot right here. And that's how actually how we got the name Chamber. The chiropractor I was with, Dr. Peter, Barb Marcianti, she was like, the Chamber. This is the Chamber. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's it. That's the name.
But that's your name. That sounds like it's supposed to fit. Oh, you
didn't
think of it.
She said it first. So I'm like, oh, that's it.
The Chamber.
Got it.
Yeah, that's a dope name.
Okay. So we rolled and I just went around, went to a couple other lots and places. And remember, these type of facilities are supposed to be in like warehouse type structures where the overhead is low. It's not really, you know, some of them no AC, you know, a big field, maybe indoor. So I kind of went opposite a little bit. I fell such in love with the building right there on State Road 84 and 595 right across from Hawks Landing. And it was empty then. It was like two tenants. And downstairs was open. And the lady said, here, you can have the signage on the building right off 595, which was dope.
Yeah.
And then the guy owned the field. So he owned the building and he owned the field. So
you
now I have
field.
A facility that has a medical component and a field right next to it where we ain't got to go to a park, you know. And so we rolled with that model a little bit. But the only thing is it was very high kind of overhead because it's a medical building. This is not a warehouse. This is like triple the number of a warehouse. Plus you have staff and all that stuff. So, you know, in that business, you run through staff, you run through people, you try to get a cohesive group. They get to a certain point, they leave, you know, they take the people with them. And it's just like, it's like ongoing and ongoing.
Something you had to learn.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to keep changing the model, this and that. Probably another thing back then, I probably would have just hired someone to run that portion of the facility because I never could get out and market it myself. Like I still had a good name.
Because you had to run it.
Because I had to go in there and actually run it or pretend like I'm running it with that less experience. Shoot, I wish Stacy would have took it over early in the game. She wanted to. She'd been a great boss. She always.
Yeah,
she
go
in there. They get they
everybody
get right
straightened up when she
I'm
walk
like,
in.
Yeah, so
that's
really
how it's supposed
to go
to be.
There and run it. Like she can run it, but she's not into that like that. You
know,
she's a real boss. I'm not the boss type. I'm more laid back. I'm more people. Friendly, I'm more like want to work out with them and, you know, do so. It was a hard, like, crossover to, like, be a boss, tell them to do this, but at the same time, I'm hanging with them, working out, and it was very fine line. So, you know, I probably would have did some things over with that. So those years kind of went past, you know, finding a model, you know, getting partners, you know, renting out rooms and stuff like that because we're a medical facility. And, you know, this past year, we kind of came together a little bit. I actually partnered with a company called Fast Switch. And Fast Switch is they have three locations in South Florida. And so I'm like, you know, I'm stepping back. I'm going to let somebody else handle the operations for the
Smart.
Chamber.
You learned.
So, Yeah, so I'm like, okay, I'll let these guys handle it. They did it before. They brought some coaches over. There was some really good coaches up and coming, and I kind of stepped back a little bit. But we got to like a probationary point, and it was like, okay, listen, if we're going to work together, we have to be chamber fast switch, or you got to put chamber on all your other facilities. Like, let's really come together and do this, or put some skin in the game too. Mm-hmm. Put some skin in, we good too. And they really wasn't feeling that. There was more like, just want to stay on the operation side. And when we make money, split the money. And, you know, so we kind of parted ways from there. So we parted away. Once you part ways, once again, you lose, you just lose people, and you just got to start over, and you got to figure out who can run this thing, who can help run it. Cause it's a monster of a facility. It's just really has a lot of potential.
It's a really beautiful building. It has a lot of nice stuff in there.
Yeah, you can do some real damage in there. So we've been coming out of that the last year, last 6 to 8 months. And so now I feel like we have kind of the best model now with the coaches, how we go about our plans and stuff like that. We went boutique a little bit and was more like private training, semi-private training. We're working with all type of athletes, tennis players, hockey players.
You get a lot of baseball players in there.
So we get a lot of baseball players in there. So we got a little boutique, but they're seasonal. Mm-hmm. So we see them for a month. We see the football player for a month. Season baseball 3 months. They're the most loyal. The baseball guys, they're there.
Yeah.
So when the World Series is over, they're training right there. It's like all year for them. That's just what they do. They train, probably hang out, kick it, train, same as hockey. Football is just a little different.
Right.
Guys are traveling. They go train at this facility, train at that facility. They just want to get out there. And they don't want to pay. That's another thing. So we don't get lot of pro football players because I'm like, you got to pay for this. This is high quality stuff.
Let me say this. One thing I know, Brennan and I have been in three different cities playing and, three different experiences with just training and gyms and learning things and meeting people. And one of the things that I noticed is a lot of guys like you and other trainers and gym owners, they have an issue with getting the pros to pay. Like a lot of these guys feel like just their name should get them free exercise and training and all this stuff. So how hard is it for you? Like to me personally, it wouldn't be hard at all because I will crack a motherfucking whip. But for you, like as a player, how hard is it for you to toe that line of being one of the guys, but also being the nigga that need his motherfucking check?
I guess it's hard for me to be like one of the guys and then say, okay, hey, you pay. Like, it's just so hard. That's somebody else's job. And to me, that's always what I felt like the facility was missing and still is some. I'm hoping we get a GM soon because that right there would just put a damper on everything that, just making sure everything is run smoothly without me being there at all. And I don't really want to be there no more. I don't want to be accessible. I want to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Combine, boom. Okay. Football week, Friday. Oh, I'm there. Maybe a meeting, maybe. And then we're doing some partnership upstairs with the Neuro Lab that we have up there, the partnership with that. So I want to kind of like get into the products and to do a lot of other things that still the facility is like the incubator for. It's just the main place, but then I can do all these little things off of the facility, camps and clinics and football and products and all this other stuff that I got going on with it. And so I've just been throwing things on a wall when it comes to that much, and that's kind of where we at as a facility in the whole. And, and we'll just kind of go from there and see how it goes. I'm still seeking people to kind of come help out, partners and stuff like that, people who has vision, who wants to be a part of a team and a cohesive group and some good people and good training. Good vibe. You've been there. The vibe is great, and I've seen that place really like packed out. I mean, sometimes I like it when it's like not too many people. Everybody got their space and they got their room.
Right.
So we're between like the boutique and then getting back like the class stuff, And so that's kind of chamber in this whole and everything around it.
Cool. So is there anything else that you want to do besides the chamber and your gym? Are there any other things that you like to explore in your life before you become old and rusty and dusty?
I know. I mean, I just, I like being an entrepreneur. So I think I just want to kind of do the corporate thing a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And, I have a corporate office that I'm looking to kind of put myself in, put a suit on, put a tie on, put a collar shirt on. I kind of want to get to that level, making phone calls, making appearances and going to golf, events and, flying around the country and, obviously flying out around the world, to be honest with you. And so that's kind of where I want to kind of get into as far as I want to get more business on the business side. and work with different groups and people. And I own several other businesses, or I'm a part of several other businesses, but they're all early. They're all startups. It'll be real cool. I get to kind of choose kind of what I want to, like, you know, push and promote. And on top of trying to do my own thing too. So, you know, that, and, you know, you see the martial arts stuff. I absolutely love that.
Oh, yeah.
That
world is, I'm there every
that world
Friday.
Is global. And I just see a humongous opportunity with that. I mean, that's just world stuff. Mm-hmm. And if we can hit that on the right button, I mean, that can do some major damage. So that's kind of where I'm at with some of the business stuff and some of the things I want to do. And then I'm obviously supporting Stacey, what she want to do. She's been supporting me for darn 10 years. You know, it's time for her to kind of come out her shell and do the things that she want to do. And I know she want to get it done. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm probably going to be at home with the babies a little bit more. You know, once she drops.
Mr. Mom. You going to be Mr. Mom in it?
Like, we're going to have to switch roles a little bit, yeah, because ain't no nannies coming up in here.
My nigga, you already know. You already know. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about the state of football right now and get some of your opinions on some of the things that are going on and your opinions on certain players. So let's start with the receivers in the league. Who do you think is the best receiver? You can give me a top three if you want, as far as just that's overall so everything all together. Who's the top three in the league right now, in your opinion?
Man, that is just too tough out here because there's so many different dudes out here. But, you know, I work with AB, so that's an easy one for me, because actually seeing him, you know, seeing him on the field, okay, in the game, boom, but actually training him, now you have, like, a totally different respect of how he go. And he goes hard, and he wants it. He's he's just trying to get in the league, like a college kid still.
Right.
You know, he's training every day. I mean, you see him, and he's just – and he's explosive, and he's tough, and he's a good guy. And it's like, he has like all, you take like all the boxes, and you're going to, obviously he's in the prime of his career right now. And you're seeing him on Nike commercials and Pepsi commercials. And he's just like really being the MJ of in the NFL, you know, shoes. And, you know, so he's doing I would say his work ethic is by far one of the best I've seen. You know, he'll catch a ball and he'll run it 80 yards, come back to the huddle. You know, his condition is ridiculous. You know, he just stay hungry all the time. And so I would definitely say him. Is, you know, I'm biased a little bit on this next one because, you know, Jarvis is, you know, he's there. I see him way more than everybody. I see Kenny. I see those guys a
you
lot.
Putting Jarvis Landry in the top three receivers. Don't make me,
like,
kill you on here.
Listen
now.
Listen to me. I'm just putting him, like, he on the outskirts of that.
He's one of your favorite guys. He's one of your favorite guys.
Because
okay.
I work with him and I see his.
Because there's no shade.
Too.
I do. Juice
Listen,
got some game, but he's not in the top 10 in my opinion.
He got game. He got game. He not. Nah, I would say top 10.
He not in my top 10.
But I just like him as a player.
Hustling.
Period. I just like him as a player. Okay, I'm just throwing him in like a little side bonus.
No
there.
Respect.
You know, I mean, it's too many
what
guys.
What do you think about
here.
Julio Jones?
Julio Jones I like a lot. The reason why, you know, Julio Jones don't be on like the tip of people's tongue is because of how what type of person he is. And he's humble. He seems humble to me, but he's not out there. You don't see, he's not flashy. I don't see him on stuff. You know, I used to say that about Reggie Wayne. Reggie Wayne's one of my favorite players. I like watching when seeing him go out there. Even though we played the same time, I wouldn't tell him that. But, you know, he's a guy that would, like, you know, always made plays, was a good leader, you know, knew what he was doing. He played with Peyton. Now, I give you a little asterisk for that, you know, because a lot of guys who play with him make, you know,
they ball.
So
special.
Even with Tom Brady, too. So it's tough, too, because you got these quarterback combinations. But Julio Jones, he is a beast. He would probably be number one.
Gave you a legit. Me and Brent just saluted you right quick.
Because you see, like, he can do absolutely everything. I mean, obviously Calvin Johnson, when he was in the league, he had some of that, you know, types. I don't know. I don't know which one between them two.
Well, it's Julio because of speed. You know,
The speed probably will oversee it. But some of the
yards after
and the grace. Fullness that this dude is doing out
built
there.
Built like Incredible Hulk.
And y'all seen him because y'all was in Atlanta, so y'all really,
and now
really
playing
know.
Against him in Tampa twice
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, so you really know what's going on with him.
Yeah.
But then after that, it's like you got so many guys.
There's so many guys that can fall into that category.
These dudes can break out like any moment. And there's some other guys that you really don't even think about that's just making plays like that, you know, all the time. So, It's very tough. I really have to like sit down and calculate in my mind, like, okay, I need to look at the whole roster and really understand, because I don't watch a lot of guys. I see the highlights barely sometimes, but I don't really get a chance to see the game film or the games. And so that's how I kind of measure some of the players. Some of these guys are not seen like that. But yeah, you know, there's a bunch of them out there. So, and they, you know, these offenses are, you know, throwing the ball a lot more too. I know Brent know that too. You know, they're throwing that thing all the time.
Yeah, because you can't touch them now. You know what I'm saying? You can't even play corner no more. So
yeah,
it's easy.
How do you feel about
you know, all these records being broken, these statistics that the receivers are putting up that, you know, pretty much aren't as difficult, in my opinion, as the era when you played, where guys could literally hang on you, touch you, grab you, all this stuff, and now they can't touch you after 5 yards. How do you feel about the way that these statistics are playing out for these receivers who kind of think they all that, a lot of them, but they really not nothing?
Yeah, that's tough because you tell a receiver that. So it was different for me. Obviously, you had to really go up and make a play. Like, dude, be all on you, draped. You know, I think you were able to, like, catch balls, like, out of bounds and, you know, get one foot in and get pushed out. So there was, like, a lot of, like, rule changes, obviously, not hitting upside the head. So you can go across the middle.
Like,
I went across the middle. Oh, you better be – that thing better be swivel with Rodney Harrison.
Right.
Swivel, for real. Your boy Taylor, swivel. I think the hardest hit I ever had in my entire life.
Was
I
who?
Fumbled. And I don't fumble.
Who was it?
Taylor, Sean Taylor, across the middle. Mm-mm-mm. I fumble. I've never fumbled. I fumbled a little bit, but not –
How he hit
knocked,
you?
Knocked me out.
How he hit you?
I mean, it was, I don't even remember.
He put you to sleep.
I just thought the ball was out. I just thought it was just so, like, him and Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis hit me hard one time, too. And you usually, as a receiver, you know the linebackers. You usually get down with them. But he caught me. And I'm like, damn, he just swallowed me up. That's how I feel about Ray Lewis, swallowed. But it's different, man. You had to go in there and be tough. And if you had concussions and got hit upside the head, does it make it even tougher? Because, you know, it's just kind of hard. But once you learn how to play receiver and you know where everybody is on the field, you kind of know where holes to get in. You kind of know when to get down. I mean, some guys like Marvin Harrison, you know, he'll catch it, get down right now. You know, he just
smart.
Won't even get touched.
Smart.
Yeah, very smart. And that's why he was able to kind of play a long time.
Right.
Because of that, you know. And I got a chance to see a lot of good receivers. You know, these day age, you ask about these guys, is different. But you actually, like, in my era, then I'm going to go, like, Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce.
Oh,
like, I'm
I was
just,
such
like,
a big Torrey Holt fan.
And
oh,
on
my
with
God.
Them type of dudes. Yeah, I'll be going with them type of dudes all day on a lot of this.
You mentioned earlier how when you were talking about your hip injury and all the stuff you were trying to do to treat it and all the pills and drugs you were taking. Right now, the players, you know, there's a lot of players that want marijuana, medicinal marijuana to be legal in the league. What is your opinion on that, and do you think that it will ever happen?
That's going to be so borderline. It's very gray, especially in some of these states that have it kind of legalized, which I don't even know what the number is. It's probably past 20.
Yeah.
Some of them have different.
It's over half, I believe.
Yeah, some have like different rules and stuff like that. And so that's just because you know the guys do it. You know, it's not like they don't. You know, you for a player, I mean, literally all you got to do is just make sure, you know,
pass your one test one time.
You got one test. I mean, that's kind of fair a little bit.
Yeah, it's very fair.
Yeah. So, you know, why would you mess that one test up?
Why won't the league just say, you know what I'm saying, this isn't an issue? Like, there's such a big medicinal side to marijuana. There's such a healthy, important side to it as far as concussions,
I believe
swelling,
so
everything. So why do you think, I feel like I know the reason, but I just want to know, what do you think about it?
I mean, culturally, you would just think that type of stuff happens in a certain, you know, with black people, you know.
I don't talk about
it. That's really, you know, where it kind of probably started at for them. And then they just can't get over that, which we already know. It's just everybody, you know,
everybody does
smokes it. And it does it, you know,
but
I won't
it's
say
just
everybody,
stuck on us.
But yeah, so it's kind of stuck on this level. And so, and, you know, I just think that, you know, they at some point they're going to have to give up on it a little bit or ease up some more. I think they've been easing up. Like, you literally got to flunk like 10 times or something, man, to really, like, go. I mean, 3 or 4 times to really, like, go into the program and this and that. But that's still a lot, though. You got to, like, think about, okay, man, I got to take this piss test. I got to do this. I got to make
sure
every
week,
they
take your
every
money.
Day, they look for you. They, you know, like you in the off season, they try to find you. Like, that's just way too much, you know. So you try not to put yourself in that situation. Mm-hmm. But some guys get caught up, and some guys get really caught up really bad where they can't even, you know, focus on their career anymore. And it shouldn't be like that, especially with all like the effects and absolutely. No. Now when you're done playing, hey,
you're good.
You're completely good to go. You know, you go get your card and do all that stuff, and you know, and really take care of your body, because it really does help your body. I mean, we beat up, mm-hmm. you know, and that's something, you know, to kind of help soothe some things, you know. And so I would hope at some point they just kind of give up on it, and you know, and I don't know about basketball, but I know in hockey, I don't think they get drug tested in hockey.
And baseball either.
So I mean, follow suit. These games been around longer.
It's the black sports, you know. Baseball and hockey aren't tested, but basketball and football are tested for marijuana.
Yeah,
the sports that's dominated by us.
Exactly.
That's what I think it is. I think it's set up, but you know what? One day, hopefully, they will actually care about the players, like really care, and say, you know
but
what?
You see some of the groups starting to come out, and people starting to. Like really stand understand up. It and really, really understand it, you know, instead of like, okay, get this off the corner or something. No, understand what it can do for you, how it can help you, and this and that. And especially as a football player, I mean, automatic check mark.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's all crazy, crazy, crazy. But listen, I appreciate you joining me. We've been on for a minute. I've been holding you up.
Yeah, Stacey came here a couple of times. Crystal checked on me.
Like, what is you doing? But thank you so much for joining me. This was such a good conversation. I feel like I learned a little bit about you even more, which was dope. And can you please tell my listeners the address of your gym and also your social media stuff, anything that you want people to be able to contact you at?
Definitely. Yeah, you have Chamber Fitness. It's in Davie, located in Davie, Florida. It's our only one. We're hoping to expand, hopefully, and you know, sometime in the future. But this is definitely the mecca that we're trying to make happen right now. And then, you know, off of that, you know, my foundation, Catch 84, Children Achievement Through Community Help, which I'm extremely passionate about. I don't do enough PR for that, because that's something that I really love doing. I love working with kids. I've been doing it since I've been playing in the league. I've always ran camps in Ohio, always ran camps everywhere I go. So, you know, I sometimes don't even like solicit or go out and get like sponsorships and stuff like that. But just know if somebody's looking to sponsor or do something for that foundation, it's definitely going to be returned immediately. You know, we do stuff just to, you know, and make sure these kids are safe and they're off the street. And, you know, we have club football now, which is really cool, because now the kids can like do something in the off season. They can travel, they can go to colleges, they can like do a lot of things. So that's what that program is about, is financial awareness, financial fitness. It's also athletic scholarships for people who can't afford the facility. And, you know, it's a learning center up there for ACT and SAT prep in Neuro City Junction. And so, you know, between that and, you know, martial arts athletics and some of the other stuff that I'm doing, you know that I'm doing a lot of positive things here in South Florida community, and hopefully, you know, in a board and in some other places. And you can see us at chamberfitness.com. Our mostly updated stuff is going to be at our Instagram. That's going to be our number one. If you want to see the most updated recent news and videos and kind of posts and all that stuff, you go to at Chamber Fitness. I'm at Chris Chambers 84. And at Martial Arts Athletics, at Catch 84. You know, it's crazy how that, you know, social media is crazy. You know that, right?
Yes.
It started when I was playing. It started, and I was seeing the guys tweet, and I didn't get it when I played.
2006.
I didn't even have it. I just got it like in 2 years ago. So I'm like, really? Nobody don't even know. You know, I got like two people on my thing. You know, so it's like,
you
got to
get into it. This is now marketing. This is the way you advertise and market now. You got to get into it.
That's why I did it. But I used to see like, you know, guys tweeting plays, and like, I mean, you used to get in trouble for that stuff. But it's what it is. Now it's a good way to expose and show what we're
now
doing
you
out
can
here.
Now you can be your own voice. You don't need a microphone and a camera in front of you anymore. Now you can get your voice and your business and everything out there on your own without needing camera and microphone. So there's some gifts to it, but we all know there's some curses too.
Yes, it is.
It's all good. But thank you so much for joining me, Chris. I appreciate you so much.
No doubt.
And you have a good evening.
All
right, and stay dry out here.
I will.
All right, peace.
All right, later, y'all.
That was Chris Chambers, Chamber Fitness. I do hubby and I do, what is that called? Mixed martial arts? Kickboxing? We do kickboxing there every Friday get our ass kicked at their gym. They have a really, really incredible gym. Hubby and I are, you know, interested in opening our own gym once he retires. So seeing their blueprint and seeing what they do is kind of, you know, it's kind of exciting, kind of cool to see, you know, what other people have already been doing and what it is we wouldn't like to do differently or the same. But what a great gym, what a great guy, great family. I'm so happy to have him on because, you know, a lot of people just, it's just certain people that talk way too much and there's certain people that don't talk enough. And I just feel like Chris is one of the guys that should talk more. He's a very intelligent guy. He's very smart and he's very humble and very nice guy. So I was so happy to have him on talking and tooting his own horn and talking about all his shit he did dopely while he was a football player. And now that he's not, he's doing such incredible things in the community as far as just sports in general and just overall being a good guy, just a good guy. He's one of those good guys out there. So shout out to him for joining me today. And I hope you guys, if you are interested in joining a gym or if you have kids that are playing sports, that you would hit up the chamber right here in Davie and show him some love and support because he's doing a lot for the community. Today was a little rough day. Today it's fucking raining all day, every day. My pool's flooded. This is trash. I don't know how I'm going to be here all summer, but fuck it. We're going to do it. Peace. Jetzt zu.